Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality. Hello, everyone. Welcome to our new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, you are in for a special treat because we're going to have a little bit of a lighter episode, and we're going to talk about movies, music, books for the one of us that reads in here, which is Rochelle. I think I've got a couple things to say about books, but not much. So Rochelle, we talk about books, we talk about movies and books and sci-fi a fair amount. And I learned recently that you are not a fan of violence in film.
Not at all.
So I'm going to try and keep my like questions and recommendations. Oh, there we go. We got the Star Trek symbol.
Live long and prosper.
Yes. So no violence like chops out a huge chunk of my movie knowledge, but I think we've still got some left in there that we can talk about. And you're also a huge science fiction fan. And one of the first longer conversations that was not about work was Star Trek, and you also mentioned Dune, and I was wondering if you have ever seen, there's a good documentary about the Dune movie that was never made called Jodorowsky's Dune. I'm probably gonna mispronounce that, and I was curious if you had seen or heard anything about that.
I had. So the Dune that they made a movie out of was a part of a trilogy. So Frank Herbert had written a lot of Dune and this thing. So it was an evolving story. And so like the Star Trek Enterprise, like when Star Trek started, it was just a television show. And so the Dune things were just books, you know, so they had their own market. And the Dune following for a while was huge. I mean, people actually watched and read everything there was to read about Dune.
People still go crazy for it. Like, I'm always surprised.
Absolutely. And I think that what they thought was is they were going to turn it into another one of those kind of series of movies. So, you know, like when you have Star Trek 1, Star Trek 28, Star Trek 30, that kind of thing. But I don't think the funding, because if you've seen the original Dune movie, can you imagine how much it cost to make that movie? I mean, they didn't use a lot of infrastructure. But I mean, the giant worms, the spacecrafts, the shooting, you know, and all that. I mean, that was a pretty.
Yeah, there was even like early CGI in there when they're doing those like suit battles where they have like the drawings over top of them. It was sort of crazy.
Absolutely. And so I think that when it came to this last movie, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce it, but when it came to that last movie, I think that the cost to make that movie, you know, the Star Trek franchise and the Star Wars franchise and the Marvel franchise immediately hit with a visceral visual thing you could see.
Yeah.
I think Dune was much more intellectual. It was much more, you had to think about these things, you know, so here you have this. So, you know, if you paid attention to the Dune movie, there was something that was not directly said in a way that made it clear to you that's where this was going, but they were mining into the ground. They were actually mining into the worms to get out this life-saving resource, right? So they were killing something in order to get something. And so a lot of the corruption in Dune with, you know, the guy that was injecting himself with diseases and, you know, had all these strange things, tendencies. I think a lot of that, if they would have had to put that again in the frame of a movie, it would have cost millions and millions of dollars. And would they have made that money back? Because Dune is a really, you've got to be a Dune person in order to watch. That's not for everybody. It's not the kind of movie everybody can watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about it like when I was a kid, I was like, oh, Dune, it's sort of like there's Star Trek and there's Star Wars and there's Dune. And then like growing up, it's like, God, why did they get like David Lynch to direct Dune? It's like a surrealist movie. And then this Jodorowsky thing, it's like, he's even more out there than David Lynch. Like they were really going for for weird, surreal, like craziness in there. And I sort of appreciate that.
Yeah, but I will say that in recent times, they've done that with other kinds of movies, right? So if you consider The Lost Boys, It's one of those movies that's kind of out there. You know, there are a lot of movies that, you know, the Vampire Chronicles that they've done. I mean, all of these movies are in a specific space that has a very specific audience, and it's making a very specific point, and it goes to that place where most of our minds don't go.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So the next movie I wanted to recommend slash ask you about, there's a movie from 1974 called Black Christmas, which is a horror slash suspense movie. And I wanted to talk about it for a couple reasons. One is it's called Black Christmas, so that sort of relates back to our language things, because they're saying, oh, this is like the anti-Christmas, like the bad Christmas thing. But the thing that I'm more interested in is they recently, so Black Christmas came out in 1974. It's about like a slasher living in a house with a bunch of sorority girls. I don't think the original was very good. It was sort of, it's just old and sort of boring in my opinion. But they recently remade it in 2019, and it got a lot of criticism because it focused more, it was directed by more of a feminist director, and it focused more on like female power, sort of like overpowering fraternity guys. And a lot of people sort of took offense to that because they sort of, one of the critics that I actually really like, he said, when people made these old slasher movies, even though they may have had like feminist or survival themes, the directors from the 70s and 80s did not have feminist ideals in mind. It just sort of came out from the subconscious. And sort of the counterpoint to that was that, well, these are all like, you know, white men in the 70s and 80s making these films, and they don't really need to think about that because they just got to do it. Whereas nowadays, you have to sort of like actively, if you're going to make a feminist horror film, you sort of have to actively think about that and do it. And I was just sort of curious on your thoughts about feminism and film, and like, how do they work together? And should they be working together?
Well, anytime you're murdering somebody, I don't think that's a good movie. Okay, so the slasher part of the movie has to go. But I would say that in a lot of ways, you know, if you think about any real movie and think about what the plot, they always have good versus bad, right? Mm-hmm. So the good, the protagonist and the antagonist, right? So these people are always at odds with each other. And then you have a story you're trying to tell about that, right? So in a lot of ways, what we are asking people to do, or what we're saying when we think about these movies, specifically when your main character or your and I don't want to even call it the protagonist, but the victim in the movie is a woman, right? That's one of those stories that people have analyzed to death and say, well, it's about sex, right? So anytime a woman is vulnerable or a victim or whatever, that's just power and control, right?
Yeah.
But when the woman is behind the camera and she's telling that story, I don't think that's the message is exactly the same, but I do think that the message does say that, you know, we can make these kind of movies too. We can tell these kind of stories too. You know, not necessarily this is a story we want to tell, but we can tell them too. And we probably can tell them a little bit better. Now, I don't know if that's a true statement or not, but that might be some of the thinking about that. But, you know, if you take vampire movies, and a lot of people talk about these things, vampire movies. So the ultimate foundation of a vampire movie is sex, right? So wherever you're going is sex. You know, if you take Interview with the Vampire, beautiful movie, no sex in it, no inferred or implied sex in the movie at all. You know, there's a little bit of things that might hint at incest. There's a little bit that may hint at, you know, taking advantage of people and things like that. But in essence, it's a story about a bunch of men who become super vampires, and they are able to control their world. Well, that moved away from the true vampire movies that say Anne Rice may have told, or people wrote Dracula, you know, those kinds of things. So they tell a very different story. I think that when you have a movie where in the case that you're, you know, one, you're making a woman something in the movie, so something in there that says something about her. But then the next part of that is that you are talking about a woman behind the lens. And I think that feminism is one of those things where I think it's such a misunderstood term, you know. So am I pro-woman? Is that what I'm saying I am? Or am I saying I'm pro an agenda? What is it that I'm saying? And I think movies that are made by women that are making a message is no different than movies that are made by men that's making a message. I think that the difference is how we are looking at the movies and what we're expecting to come out of the movie. So if you take Black Christmas, you said they recently remade it?
Yep, yep.
Did they make it the same way? Did they use the same thing, same ideas, or they go altogether different?
It's completely different. I would say the only similarity is that they both take place around Christmas. And there's like a couple homages or whatever to the old film, but there's no real similarities besides that. Yeah.
But so I think that in a lot of ways, we have to understand what terms we're using. And I think being technologists as we are, we don't think a lot about terms. You know, we get used to hearing them and they become a part of our communication. I think like terms like feminist and male chauvinist and supremacy and all these things, we really need to flush those out to find out what they really mean. You know, so, you know, are you saying so it's almost like Black Lives Matter. Are you saying white lives don't matter or blue lives don't matter? I think that there's some assumption about these things that it may not necessarily be true, specifically in the instance of feminism.
Yeah, yeah. As far as the terms go, you really like cleared that up for me when you described sort of the, when people say white lives matter, it's like, okay, well, yeah, but like, if somebody's house is on fire, you don't go and take the hose to the houses that aren't on fire. It's that the one that is on fire is the one that needs attention right now. And I thought that was a really good, that always helps me sort of visualize.
Yeah. I mean, all lives matter. Men and women matter. You know, I mean, regardless of what you identify as, they all matter. It just at times we tend to highlight one over the other because something is going on with them. Like, so feminism in music, in movies, is like everywhere. You see it all the time. It just, it's not obvious, right? That's what we're talking about. It's not obvious that we're trying to make a point to say, you know, women are this or men are that. It's just somebody's trying to make a point about something in that specific place with that specific topic. So it's a little bit to the point where when you think about feminism, you know, you think about, well, you know, there was the bra burning, you know, there was the marches and, you know, but in reality, you know, it's just that we have messages that come from different viewpoints. So if you are truly a science fiction person, you know, you like science fiction movies and almost very little in science fiction that does not appeal to you. You know, so I will tell you, so I've never watched The Hobbit. You know, so I haven't figured out what that is yet, but I haven't watched that. But I watched every one of I read and watched every Harry Potter movie that came out because it sits on the edge of science fiction. You know, a woman wrote the book, you know, it's, you know, so I think it's like being really clear that you understand what it is that you're, what when people talk about something in a feminist or whatever the direction they're going in, I think they're trying to make a point about that specific group or that specific issue.
Yeah.
And slasher films in a feminine.
So speaking of slasher, one other one I wanted to ask you about was the film Get Out. And I was curious if you've seen that.
I've seen about 5 minutes of it. I can't watch that either. That's just, you know. I mean, I will serve as a recommendation. Don't go see that movie if you get scared at night. So you have nightmares about the movies you've seen. So I will tell you, so just a small redirection. So I saw The Omen, The Exodus. What is it?
Exorcist.
Exorcist. Mm-hmm. And there was one other one I saw. Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Those are three.
Classic.
No, it is not. So those are the three that I saw. I'm going to tell you, for a year, I had nightmares after I seen The Exorcist. The Omen, I didn't go anywhere where there were children standing up by themselves. I wasn't fooling with that. And then nobody who has a chainsaw, more than one chainsaw, am I going to their house? You know, so I'm not the best person with these scary movies. So, you know, Get Out was just, when I saw the place where they were doing the little trailer about it, I was like, okay, no, I'm not watching that. You know, so.
Yeah. It was very, so being a horror fan, when the previews came out, the previews got tons of buzz. And I was like, oh, this looks awesome. Like, I really didn't know anything about Jordan Peele before watching that. So, like, I had, like, no preconceived notions going in. And shortly before it came out, it was getting, like, the buzz was, like, so crazy. Like, Chance the Rapper was buying out theaters in Chicago and just like letting people come like see it. And like hearing about that, I was like, this is going to be awesome. I can't wait. And then when I watched it, I really enjoyed it, but I was like, okay, like this dude, like he made like a killer, like Hitchcock level suspense film, like on his first shot. Like that's amazing. But I still didn't really understand, like, I didn't understand the like total craze for it until hearing like Jordan Peele talk about it. And like he pretty much said like he didn't make it for white people. He made it for a black audience. And when he started sort of going through the reasons about that, I was like, oh, of course. Like, no wonder. And I guess my question to you is like, how do you feel about movies being made like for a specific audience? Like that was his point was like, by default, movies are made for white men because those are the people that come see the movies. And he wanted to do something that was made for, you know, non-white men, like black men and women. And I thought that was really interesting. And it was just something that I'd never really heard of before or even really thought of before. I guess, you know, mostly because, you know, we keep talking about all this. A lot of times I just stay in my lane. I'm not really looking outside. And it was very eye-opening to me that that he had like, I guess the bravery to do it. And then that he did it in a way that made it like, I mean, instant classic, first movie ever. His first film ever is an instant classic. And it's incredibly impressive.
Yeah. So, you know, he started out as a duo on a comedy show. Mm-hmm. It's either Peele and somebody, I can't remember exactly what it was.
Keegan-Michael Key is the other dude on there.
Yeah. And so they had a television show. So when he decided he was going to make a scary movie, it was really shocking to us because he had spent most of his time in comedy, but I think that was a good thing. Mm-hmm. But I think that in a lot of ways, you know, movies made for specific audiences. Have you ever seen Memoirs of a Geisha?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Who is that movie made for? It's hard to tell, right? You know, I mean, it's a movie about Japanese culture and about, you know, this forbidden life. Mm-hmm. But a lot of movies are like that. Jane Eyre. Have you ever seen that?
I have not seen that.
That's a movie made about, it's a love story. It's simply a love story with a lot of sad things that happen in it. So, you know, when people write movies for specific audiences, it must be because there's a vacuum or something missing in that space, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know, and I'm not the best person to even ask, but I don't know a lot of Black horror actors, directors, and all those things. I think anybody can act in those movies, but like when you think about, you know, like the kind of movie it is, you know, that they are specifically aimed at that Black horror, right? Yeah. So maybe that was a market that was untapped for him or something like that. But then again, on the other side, you know, there are a lot of movies that are made for ethnic groups because there is no movies for ethnic groups. So if you go to the movies, so I think a good example of that is Black Panther. Black Panther mm-hmm. is just a phenomenal movie, right? So here's this group, this thing, the Marvel legacy is huge, right? It's been around for a long time. We all know Marvel Comics. We know they've been around for a long time, right? Yes. But here they took a person and they made a country that was profitable. Everybody was successful. There wasn't so much internal wars, you know, and they showed that was one of those feel good movies. It wasn't meant necessarily to say anything. So we all Wakanda forever, you know, we all got that. And that's what we got from the movie is saying that Black Lives Matter. And that's exactly what that is. Now there are other movies and, you know, I don't know if your wife takes you to the movies, but you know, like they're romantic comedies. So there are romantic comedies for Black people that you can watch and they're romantic comedies for other ethnicities, which are very good, you know, kind of relationship things. Like if you have a date night, you can go watch mm-hmm. a movie or you can rent a movie or something. And so there's that. A lot of other movies in that same space can be more documentary. So Henrietta Lacks. So that's a pretty powerful movie. It's made, the whole premise is that Black people are still being exploited even in health. So it's one of those movies where you hear these things all the time. But I think that Godfather is mm-hmm. another great example. Who was that movie made for? What is the movie about? So is it a movie about the mafia? Is it about family? Is it about money? Is it about betrayal? What is it? You know, Scarface, what is it about? Is it about cocaine? Is it about violence? You know, so you get a lot of these movies that are made for a very specific audience or made for a very specific topic, and then it generates its own buzz. So, I've seen all three of the Godfathers. I haven't watched them in their entirety because when they get to the violent part, I walk out. But yes. you know, like by the time they got to three, they should have stopped with two. Yeah. Because I was like, okay, what happened here? But at the end of the day, it was made for a very specific audience who wanted more Godfather movies. They enjoyed the first one so much. But you notice there's not been a Scarface 2 or Scarface 3. What happened in that movie? And I'm going to tell you something. I think even young people today still watch Scarface. That's how violent. What? So, you know, I think that in a lot of cases, they make audiences to bring about a message or to state something.
Yeah, that's. I agree. That I'm sort of surprised they have not done a Scarface 2. That sounds ripe for a sequel or a reboot or something. Somebody must have the rights to that.
Ooh. Say hello to my little friend. No. I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. So a few years ago, and I think it might be 10 years ago, my husband and his friend went to see a movie, a scary movie. And all I can remember is they did everything with a flashlight. So it's mostly dark and it was not a well-reviewed movie. It didn't receive a lot. So it wasn't really scary.
Yeah.
It wasn't Scream. What was the name of that movie? It was something, but it came out with a lot of buzz and fell flat on its face.
It's not Blair Witch Project, is it?
Blair Witch Project.
Okay.
Yeah. So what? You know, so either the people didn't have enough money to make a real top-end movie, a scary movie, or this was just a new genre that they were introducing to us.
Yeah. So I know a bit about the Blair Witch Project because I've watched a lot of stuff on it. It's very interesting. So Blair Witch came out in 1999, and it was one of the first movies where they did like social media marketing. Mm-hmm. So they were like, I don't know if you remember much, well, I'm sure you remember much about 1999, but in 1999, like I barely knew what a computer was, right? Like my idea of a computer was, I could sign on to AOL. And I think that was like more than most of my friends knew about it. And at the time, like my first introduction to Blair Witch was, I had people coming up and saying, hey, have you heard about this like reality movie that they're releasing? Like they found this footage, like people thought it was real. People thought that a news crew went missing and were like attacked by a witch. And like, I sort of thought the same thing. I was like, I'd never heard of that. That's very interesting. You know, I'm like, how old was I at the time? I guess I was 22 or 23. So I probably should have known better, but I didn't at the time just because it was like, oh, there's this new thing. It's crazy. And I remember we went to go see it and I was not a fan because the shaky cam sort of made me sick.
Yeah. That's what my husband said.
Yeah. It was not really structured like a movie. It's just these people out in the woods. And apparently that's how they really filmed it, was they hired some actors and they gave them some cameras and they're like, hey, we want you to be like around here on this day. We're going to set up some spooky stuff. Just sort of do whatever you want. But all of that social marketing buzz actually made the movie a success. Like that movie made a ton of money, even though I would say it's like a really crappy film.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they even made two sequels. And then they recently did a reboot of it like 2 or 3 years ago, which the reboot was done by this dude named Adam Wingard, who recently made the King Kong versus Godzilla movie. So he's like fairly up there. And when he was filming it, they were calling it like The Forest or something. And then at the first screening, when they brought people in, another social media thing, they said, surprise, this is no longer The Forest. This is The Blair Witch. It's a remake. Surprise. And, you know, it was pretty much the same plot, but they had some drones and some other things in there. And it was very... I don't know. It was fine. It's just not, I don't see that as like a great film. It was also influential because it wasn't the first found footage movie, but it was like the first modern found footage movie, like since, I guess since Cannibal Holocaust, which also another, if you do not like violence, definitely do not watch Cannibal Holocaust, Rochelle. But that film, the director was actually arrested because the government thought he killed his actors. And he had to get the actors to come and like testify at his trial and be like, no, y'all, it's all fake. Like it's movie magic. It was all, you know, I'll call it social media marketing, but that was back in the, I guess, late 70s or early 80s that one came out. So he couldn't really call it social media, but it's all these weird like gimmicks that just get like you know, dollars in the theaters. Like, hey, there's this weird thing. Come see it.
Absolutely. And I think that's what a lot of movies do. So, you know, depending on the budget. So if you have like a Tom Cruise or some high end actor, you can expect that the movie is going to be marketed to a very broad, wide audience. But when you get to lesser known characters, you know, the audience is less and the amount of money they are anticipating making is less, mm-hmm. but they're hoping it will turn into a hit or a fad or something like that to go someplace, you know? So yeah. It's one of those things when you think about movies, when you think about it in the grand scheme of things, they launch so many things, right? So we're going to talk about music. I don't know how much time we have to talk about, but we're going to talk about music. And so like, if you think a lot of the soundtracks to these movies, right? So, I mean, how many of them have gone, you know, one Grammy's been really, really great soundtracks. And so I think that at all the time it's a profit or a money thing. I don't think it's ever, well, I shouldn't say ever. I don't think that it's often they're trying to tell a story. In other words, they don't care if the movie flops or not. I don't care if no one goes to see it. They're trying to make a point.
Yeah.
You know, those are the kind of things. So I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. What do you think about movies in the midst of COVID?
So like making movies, like where the making movies going to see?
Well, the fact that
you
can't go to a theater. So now you have to either stream it or buy it in Redbox or something like that. What do you think about, you get the same level of enjoyment in a virtual movie than you get when you go to a theater?
Absolutely not. Of course, we've been streaming movies because we can't go to the theaters. But I think for us, and I'm speaking for like me, my wife and my son, like we like going like out to the movies as like a social, like family event, right? Like we're going to go to the movie. We're going to talk to the people there. We're going to get a bunch of popcorn. We're going to talk like while we're driving to, we've got like a ritual of while we're driving to the theater, we're going to give like pre-reviews and, you know, talk about what we think is going to be good, what's not going to be good, is the movie even going to be good, because we will go see movies that we're expecting not to like. The movie experience is fun. Having the giant screen is great. The chairs are super comfortable. And then like afterwards we'll go out to lunch or dinner and talk about the movie, and it's really like a full day event, right? Like we'll leave at 11 in the morning, get back at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and we've had like a fun family bonding experience. Watching movies at home is great, but I mean, we pretty much just like watch the movie and that's it. Like we can enjoy the movie for the movie, which is totally fine, but it's not just that whole experience of going out and just, I don't know, I don't think anything can really replace that theater. I understand that, you know, because of COVID, like we're probably not going to have as many theaters as we used to have. And if people don't get back to the theaters, then, you know, that may be the end, which I think will be sad, but you know, it's also not the end of the world.
So, but then that leaves the other part. So if you are open to the idea of not going to work in person, why would it need, you know, so like, I mean, like just trying to understand the argument of in-person work versus in-person movies or in-person entertainment. Like, so how do you manage safety in those environments?
That's a great point. And it's probably, I would say going to the movies and going into an office probably need like similar, if not identical, safety concerns, right? Like they're both going to be in indoor tight spaces. I know with the movies, they're at least like putting people a little bit far apart, but that doesn't mean that you're not walking by the air that everybody else is breathing. Right. And same with the office, right? Like everybody's going to be a little bit further apart, but you're all breathing that same air. And it's a little bit scary, but I'm hoping that it gets better now that more and more people are being vaccinated.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. I think that I have gotten accustomed to watching things through streaming services. Mm-hmm. And it often brings a question to my mind, why would you need a regular cable or some other kind of service like that when I can stream it? Like, so if I look at, like, if you bundled all together the streaming services, they would be less than most people's cable bill.
Yeah.
You know, so can you adjust to that now? You know, I would say one of the downsides of going to the movies is somebody's phone rings or they get a call or they're getting up and moving around. So I don't miss that part at all.
You know, I don't miss that part. But me and my son, we had a really good experience where we went to go see one of the Purge movies. And the there was a group of women. I know you definitely don't watch the Purge movies, Rochelle. But there was a group of ladies sitting right next to us, and they were so into that movie. They were cheering, they were laughing, they were screaming. Like, that made our experience infinitely better than it would have than if we were just like sitting at home watching. Like, we talked about it the other day. We were like, remember when we went to go see The Purge, and the women were going like crazy whenever one guy got on the screen? Like, it was amazing. And that's something that I think will be very hard to replicate.
Yeah. So you would definitely say you're in the camp of horror. That's your favorite kind of movie, is horror movies?
I think so. I mean, I love all types of movies, but horror is probably the one that I gravitate to most.
You take your wife and your child to see these things too?
Oh yeah. 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 Not all of them. They won't go see like the crazy stuff, but they'll go see most of them.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I'm sure horror is not for you, Rochelle, but I would say like maybe start with some intro horror and
So I can't even deal with regular violence, right? So, you know, I think I told you this before, Arlington Road. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna tell you, that movie traumatized me, so I'm still traumatized that by today. Because one, he didn't get caught, right? So he was able to get away with it. Okay, that really happens in real life. That does happen, like, you know, people kill and do things like that. So I don't think I can get past that. So I'm still stuck at Arlington Road. And what is that, 1979, 1980? I don't know when this movie came out, but I'm still stuck there. So no, I don't think I'm going to join you in horror, Drew. Now, if you want to do a rom-com, let's go. I can talk to you about that anytime. You know, you want to talk about a musical, I'm right there with you.
I do like some musicals. My family will not go see musicals with me, so.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I'm with you on all those kind of movies. But that horror stuff, you know, like, let's see, The Silence of the Lambs. I think mm-hmm. I went to see that. Oh, my God. When he said about eating a man's liver with some Chianti. I'm like, okay, I need to go home now. I'm already in the wrong place. You know, I've gotten the wrong movie on the schedule, something, because they're just so terrible. I mean, like, it's just so hard. I mean, imagine that happened in real life. That's just terrible.
But it's not real life. Sort of, that's the thing. Like, have you read that short story? There's a Philip K. Dick short story called Do Robots or Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? It's like what Blade Runner is based on. And one of the plot points in there, which when I read it as like a high schooler, like I had no, like I was like, this is stupid. Why would anyone do this? But they have a telephone where you like call a number and you like dial an emotion. So like, if you want to feel scared, you'd like dial the scared button. If you want to feel happy, dial the happy. And I was like, why would anyone want to do that? Why not just be scared or be happy? And like, the older I get, I'm like, oh, well, that's pretty much what I'm doing with horror movies, is I want to be scared for a little while. So let me dial that scared button. And,
No, Drew, I'm afraid that this is the one place where I can't partner with you on this. You're on your own. You know, you've got all this to yourself. You own all the horror genre, and I'm not going to be very much help to you. So, you know, so a lot of them I read the whatever the reviews are and what it says about what the movie's about. But like, you know, like I so when is the last I saw Roe v. Wade, the most recent version of Roe v. Wade? I saw that. I saw Ta-Nehisi Coates, Between the World and Me.
Oh, I haven't seen it. What is that?
Oh, you should watch it. You have just got to see it. You would love it. It's not what you think it is. It's a movie about being Black.
Okay. I'm adding that to my list.
I'm going to send you a link to it.
Awesome. And I think we're about at time, so we'll have to save our music one for next time. But this was a very fun conversation. I've definitely laughed more in this one.
Absolutely. And I think that there's a lot to talk about, unpack in this place. This is one of those things where your views really come into to shape, you know, what you think about things. Like, you know, I want to tell everybody that's listening, watch whatever you watch. If you enjoy it, watch it. Because I think that at the end of the day, you know, having people, enjoy what they enjoy watching is relaxing. It brings you, you know, that's great. I mean, but mm-hmm. I think it's one of those examples where you see that we all are different, you know, like you and my husband would get along great. You know, you're not a Miami Dolphin fan, but other than that, you and him would get along great. You know, where I would not go see a horror movie. You know, you couldn't even pay me to go see a horror movie. Now, my son, on the other hand, likes violence movies, you know, so, mm-hmm. you know, he's a huge Marvel fan, but I mean, he likes anything that has violence, like House of Cards and, you know, all kinds of things. And so I go in the room wherever he is. He has his own little man cave. So I'll go in there and he says, "Mom, they're getting ready to kill somebody. You need to leave." Okay, I'm leaving right now. Let me leave. So I think that this is one of the things where it's a personal taste and we shouldn't condemn or be for or against anybody's choices in movies. You just have to find what you like to watch. Where people don't die.
Yes, I'll agree there. But if you want to watch some with some violence, you know.
Exactly. Cool. Call Drew. Drew will watch some violence with you, yes. Some horror with you. Call Drew. Reach out to Drew. He will be watching all the horror movies you want. Y'all can. What do you can you through Zoom or some other mechanism? Can you watch? So I know that there is some kind of app that I see on the television where you can watch a movie with your kids, if your grandkids. Or something. Can you watch a horror movie with somebody, you know, in different houses than you? Can you watch?
Absolutely. I think you can even. I think Netflix and stuff will even like sync it up now. They're getting, especially with COVID, they've gotten good about, hey, watch this with someone else, and you can like pause it at the same time and everything.
Well, I think you need to tell more people about that, because that would be a great thing, because you can watch it with your friends, you know, as opposed to being, you know. Yeah. You know, watching it and telling each other what you thought about the movie, you can watch it together. So, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Drew, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for doing this. I think we need to have all Bruce Springsteen podcast.
That'll be fine with me. I've got plenty of stuff to say about him as well. He's great.
Yeah, I love Bruce Springsteen.
Thank you for listening to Eminent Teachnology. If you like the show, please review, subscribe, and recommend us to your friends and family. We'd love to hear feedback from you as well. You can email us at eminentteachnology@gmail.com. See y'all soon.